Today we're going to talk about the larger story. I'm glad that you're here. We're going to talk about that we're in the third kind of movement in our series on the larger story. And the first movement was creation. And we can't get past creation. Creation is going to be part of everything we do because God showed his amazing love and power in creation. And that same amazing love and power is going to be part of every movement in this larger story. But today, this month, we're talking about the rescue. And, you know, we're heading towards Christmas when the Christmas present of all time was Jesus. And so that's what rescue really is all about. And so is the idea of Christmas, the idea that God loved us so much. When we were in our greatest need, he sent his son Jesus. And so that's where we're going to be. Today, we're going to talk about lessons from the greatest rescue ever seen. Now, I'm a football, ex-football coach and player, and I keep up with football. I'm not a fanatic. As a matter of fact, part of me, I have a love-hate relationship with football, like many of you probably do. And so this is me. And so my mom and I are really into the football season right now, the college football playoffs. And so we were really hoping that Alabama didn't make it in to the playoffs. But today, we think Alabama probably will make it in, and we're not happy about that. But who else would go? You know, who else could go? I was hoping that TCU would win yesterday, but that would have messed up Oklahoma's shot anyway, so TCU didn't win, so that didn't matter. But in 1978, my friends, two of my very best friends, Gene and Melody Sheets, and my wife and I were watching the Orange Bowl game. And both of the women were pregnant. I mean, like, really pregnant, like out there pregnant. And the game was between Oklahoma and Arkansas. And Oklahoma got the tar beat out of them by Arkansas that night. It was awesome. Yeah. But before the game was over, Melody, my friend, went to the hospital and her baby son was born. Her first son, my first son, was born a month later. And he grew up to be a helicopter pilot in the Navy. And he flew a lot of missions in Iraq, also in Afghanistan. But while he was stationed in the United States, he was at one point about 10 years ago was stationed up in Washington State, and there was an accident down in a valley, and a girl was injured, and they assessed that her injuries, they weren't going to be able to get her out. It would take hours to get her out, walking out of this valley. And so the other thing they could do was send a helicopter. And so this is my friend Brandon coming through this valley to rescue this girl who was going to die. And as the helicopter came through the valley, the wing, what do you call those things? Rotors, those things that spin, you know. There's a certain distance that they can get from something else before you can't go any farther. And they were pushing the limits on that. And as they came down through the valley, you can see this is from the bridge. They had to go under this bridge. And again, the distance on the sides and the distance from the top was just barely minimum. You could barely get there. But they had to get down to that girl. They had to drop a rope and pull her up. And of course, for me, this was the greatest rescue I'd ever seen. And she made it. All the crew lived. They were given many honors for rescuing this girl. But it's probably not the greatest rescue ever, because the greatest rescue ever is, of course, Exodus. Come on. And yet it's a story we've heard kind of so many times. It doesn't have that Mission Impossible feel, right? unless you would have been one of those Egyptians. And really, the magnitude of it is way beyond what happened in my friend's helicopter rescue. I mean, the magnitude of it is beyond imagination. The greatest superpower on earth had subjected this other people as slaves to slavery for over 400 years. And now God is going to do something. But I'm just going to read to you, remind you of where kind of we are in the story. We're here at 217, and there's this rescue happening. It's in our past. As Bob likes to say, this rescue started with, it began with creation power. Aslan on the move, right? And so this creation power in God, in Abraham, and then it began then, the people were rebelling. God's going to come rescue these rebels, but they had become slaves. And when I say creation, one is greater than three, that goes back to what? Do you remember as we were teaching this last week? Chapter one, the power of the creation is greater than what happened in chapter three of Genesis when the people rebelled. God's love and power is greater than your weakness, right? Nod with me. God's love and power is greater than your rebellion, okay? And so here it is. It's going to be, we start out in Abraham. God had this plan that he was going to rescue everybody. But eventually, Abraham's family moved down to Egypt, became a great nation. And I'm going to read this story to you from Exodus chapter 1. The people, God's people, and I want to say you also, even though you weren't slaves in Egypt, we've been slaves to something else. We'll get to that in a minute. Here it is. Exodus, I'll just read it because the story itself is in the text. Joseph and all his brothers and all of that generation died. But the Israelites were exceedingly fruitful, and they multiplied greatly and increased in numbers and became so numerous that the land was filled with them. And a new king, to whom Joseph meant nothing, came to power in Egypt. I don't know if you've ever had that experience. I've had this experience several times working at a place for 40 years where I had this great reputation, and then we had a new boss, and the new boss don't care what you did yesterday. What have you done for me lately? Right? Okay. This is kind of who's Joseph? We don't know who Joseph is. So he said, look, he said to his people, the Israelites have become too numerous for us. We must deal shrewdly with them, or they will become even more numerous. And if war breaks out, they'll join our enemies and fight against us and leave the country. His shrewdness, here's how the Bible explains what his shrewdness was. So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And the Israelites built Pithom and Ramesses as store cities for Pharaoh. But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread the Israelites. And the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly. I want you to hear that word, ruthless. Some of you think you got a tough boss. How many of you think you got a tough boss? Your boss is tough. Kevin thinks that his boss is tough because Kevin is his boss. Okay. but some of us, you know, we've had a tough boss before, but not this tough. He worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor and brick and mortar with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians used them ruthlessly. This is really important. It's important for you as well to hear your story in this story. I want you to hear your part of this story. You're one of these slaves. Now, a different day, we might talk about you as an Egyptian ruler, but today, you're thinking, I'm one of these slaves who's been treated ruthlessly. How ruthlessly? Well, the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose name were Shiphrah and Puah, when you help the Hebrew women in childbirth and observe them on the delivery stool, if it's a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let him live. This is how ruthless it was. They're killing the babies. They're beating them. They're abusing them. As it says in your handout, they were captured, they were tortured, they were wounded, and they were dying. This is the situation they found themselves in. And if for you to read this text appropriately, you need to sympathize or see yourself in that position. Not the cush job you have right now, right? But right now you see yourself in this position. And so what they needed was deliverance, but they couldn't get away from this superpower. And then God showed up. And we know this story well. Of probably all the stories in the Bible, there's only maybe one or two stories that are more famous, maybe none, for many people, more famous than the Exodus story. And so when you think about an Exodus movie, what do you think of? Ten Commandments. Who said Ten Commandments? Okay. Sally says Ten Commandments. She's 60-ish. What other movies might you think of? Prince of Egypt. Yeah, Prince of Egypt, what? Prince of Egypt, yeah. Well, there's movies. We know the stories. There's the plagues, right? There's the plagues, and there's the Pharaoh, no, you can't go. Moses says, let my people go. Pharaoh says, okay. Then he says, no. You know this story. And then the last 10th plague comes, and all the oldest children die. And they have what Sally talked about earlier, the Passover. And then they're led out, and Moses leads them out. And as all the slaves are leaving, they're taking everything the Egyptians have. As much as they can carry, they're taking their cattle, they're taking their sheep, they're giving it to them. I mean, they're saying, hey, leave, please leave. Take my gold, take my silver, take everything I've got. Go, just go, because we need you, we want you to go. And so then, as the big crowd, the big mass, the probably 500,000 people are walking. Can you imagine 500,000 people walking? It'd be like walking down I-20 to Abilene. You can imagine it, 500,000 people with all this cattle and all these other things they're taking with them. And then Pharaoh changed his mind. And so they chase them. The Egyptians chase them. And they get to the Red Sea. Right? And then Moses stands in front of the Red Sea. And what happens? Yeah. We sang that song earlier today, you know, trust in me. Yeah, somebody's singing it up here in the front row. So, but God does part the waters, and they walk across on the other side. And so God does this miracle because he's a rescuing God. And so I want you to feel this rescue, this great awesome rescue. You've been saved. And so the question is, how do people respond to being rescued? That's what we're going to talk about really today. How do people respond to this great rescue, the greatest rescue story ever? How do people respond? Well, oddly, not all that well. People don't respond all that well to being rescued. Now, a lot of times, people do, at the beginning, they're so excited to be set free. It seems good. I'm set free from this whatever happened to me before. And so they did have a little party right on the other side of the Red Sea. Woohoo! We're excited. This is good. Like, I just got my brand new car, but next month it's not brand new. You know, so whatever it is, they're partying because, wow, we escaped death. But then things begin to happen to them. And I want you to see if you see yourself in this part of the story as well. So it begins with whining. The people whine and complain instead of trust and ask. Now, I want to talk about this in a couple ways. First of all, in Exodus 16, they're talking, they're hungry. And they're saying, where's the food? Where's the food? Now, God had just rescued them in these miraculous ways, and they're thinking, uh-oh, he just left us out here to die. Does that make sense? No, if he's going to rescue you, he's going to take care of you. But to me, it's like this. Just imagine the Titanic. Y'all know the Titanic, the story of the cruise ship, the Titanic. And it goes down, right? It sinks. The Titanic sinks, right? And as the Titanic is sinking, some of the people are getting into, life rafts, and they're getting into rescue boats, right? And so you can imagine this is what's going on, right? The rescue boats are going away. And rescue's happening, and the ship is sinking, and you're sitting there, and it'd probably be Rachel right here. She'd say, I'm on a rescue boat. Gosh, I'm getting wet. Can't you keep me dry on the wet rescue boat? And then Emily is over here. She's going to say, and where's the food? I mean, don't rescue boats have snacks? Come on. Why no snacks? And Lucas, he's even gone. He said, I'm out of here, man. They don't have basketball here on this rescue boat. I ain't staying. But this is a human nature, you know. We've been rescued, and then the whining begins, and the complaining begins. Now then, I want you to notice there's a difference between whining and complaining and persistent asking. And that difference is in your heart. Because the Psalms are full of persistent asking. God, please give me this. Please, I need help. I need salvation. And in the New Testament and the Old Testament alike, God, the Scripture says, keep on asking, persistently ask. Even be like a widow, just banging on the door. But what's the difference in that and complaining? Well, it's that heart. It's the heart that trusts God, and I'm going to trust Him, and I'm going to ask. And yeah, a lot of you have known it. You've recognized it in yourself, perhaps. And if you're a parent, for sure you've recognized it in your kids. Sorry, kids. When you get to be parents, you'll also recognize it in your kids. There's this whiny gene that we have. And we're apt to be complainers. And complaining happens when you forget what God has already done and what He is promising to do. Think about your situation. What God has already done in your situation is massive. If you're sitting right here in this church building this morning, you are blessed by God. Okay? He's already done things that are massive in your life, and He's promised to do more. And we trust Him based on what He's already done and on the promises He's made, not these guys. They're whiners. No, they keep going. There's more to this, okay? So one of the things they say in chapter 32, this is taking too long. Why does it? So Moses is up on the mountain, and he's been gone for a long time, 40 days. He's up meeting with God. He's going to come back down with the law. But here's what it says in chapter 32. When the people saw that Moses was so long in coming down from the mountain, wow, they've been in slavery for 400 years. And he's gone 40 days talking to God, who had just rescued them, right? You've been too long, Moses. What'd they do? They took all their jewelry and made an idol, a golden calf, and they began to worship the calf. And here's what they said about it. They said, Aaron took what was handed to him, made it into an idol, cast in the shape of a calf, fashioning it with a tool. And here's what they said. These are your gods who brought you up out of Egypt. All of a sudden, they're going to start worshiping these other gods because they don't have enough patience to wait. But of course, none of us have that problem. because we are supremely patient. We never think things are God's way is too long, but actually maybe we do. And because we're having to wait on God, what we begin to do is take matters into our own hands. And our idols may not look like a golden calf. They may instead look like a political system or an economic system. And we begin to worship the economic system that seems like if you work hard, you're going to get everything you need. I'm going to make the right smart investments. I'm going to work my way to happiness. Because God's way is taking too long. Or maybe it's not that. Maybe it's some other. Maybe it's your family or it's your education. The other things become your idol just as much as that idol of gold was of a calf was an idol to these guys. Because God's way is too long. You know, there's not a lot of times what God rescues us from, it takes a while to experience total freedom. For instance, there is no pill for sobriety. You just can't pop it in your mouth and all of a sudden I'm free from addiction. That's not the way it works. Okay? And so in many of the things, you know, rehab, in some ways, I could call that salvation. God is showing them a new way to live. And a lot of us need rehab from the things we're slaves to. You follow me with that? Sometimes experiencing freedom takes a lifetime. A lifetime of rehab. That doesn't sound too great, but rehab from sin, yeah, God's way sometimes takes a while. Next, the other thing that they began to say, it's too hard. So they leave this place where they had made the golden calf, and they end up almost in, they send some spies over. And in Numbers 13, the spies get together. There's 12 spies. They went into the promised land. They looked around. They said, wow, we're never going to be able to do this because these guys are huge. And compared to them, we look like grasshoppers. I mean, like, are you kidding me? Your God had just destroyed the Egyptian army, the greatest army in the world. Your God had just destroyed that, and you're saying, it's too hard. The obstacles are too big. We just look like grasshoppers. And what they say then is, I tell you what, let's choose a new leader and take us back to Egypt. They want to go back to Egypt over and over in this little process. What had happened is they had this bad memory of what slavery was like. Remember when I said at the very beginning, let me read to you what slavery's like? The ruthlessness of it? And you know what they said? They said, man, back then we used to sit around and eat all we wanted. Everything was good. That's what they said. And isn't that sometimes what we think? Because sometimes the way is hard. The way to freedom may not be the easiest route, but it's the good route. Okay, you understand what I mean there? Sometimes the easy way is not the right way. And so here they are. They're looking at every obstacle they can think of, and they're asking, maybe we should go back. And then finally, this is another reaction or response to rescue. When they get into the promised land, God says, you're going to go into that promised land, and I'm going to warn you of something that's going to happen. And in Deuteronomy 8, he says, you're going to think when you get there, you did this all by yourself. And you're going to beat your own chest and say, wow, aren't I awesome? I did all this myself. I've rescued myself. I lifted myself up by my own bootstraps. I did this. I worked hard. I was faithful. All about me. I did it. I did it all. Come on. We're gonna celebrate our greatness. He said, that's what's going to happen to you. And when that happens to you, you're going to turn around and find out you're going right back into slavery, because the slavery wasn't just from the Egyptians, okay? The slavery was partly from themselves. So, I want you to take a minute for just a second to think about your own life in regards to freedom that you have now, the freedom that you're experiencing right now, the life, the good life that you're experiencing right now. And I want you to think about how would you finish this sentence? I couldn't have done this unless I had help from, and I want you to think of a person. Who is a person in your life who has helped you become the person that you are in a positive and good way? Okay, I'm going to do something that's kind of crazy. Not that crazy. I mean, I've done crazier. So I'm going to count to three, and everybody's going to say a name. Just the first name of the person. Just say it out loud, not shouting, not whispering. Just say it out loud. You're thinking of a real person. Because, you know, you haven't come this far by yourself. God has been with you. But God showed up in everyone's life in this room. God showed up as a person somewhere along the line. Am I right? I want you to think of that person's name, and you're just going to say their name. I'm going to count to three. One, two, I'm going to count to three. One, two, three, and then you're going to say it. One, two, three. Patsy. Yeah. Isn't that good? Just to think about how you got the freedom you're now experiencing. It's because someone else, God sent someone else. God sent Moses to these folks. If I'd have done this thing with them as they're listening to Moses talk, they should have said, Moses, right? Who helped me? So instead of these other responses, whining or saying it's taking too long or it's going to be too hard or I did it all myself, what is a appropriate response to being rescued? Because, you know, we've already experienced that rescue. Jesus came, lived, died. We sang about that this morning. We've experienced the rescue. So how do you respond? Well, I'd say the best response is to trust the promise and put one foot in front of the other. So here's what happened with Moses. He died. Joshua took over. And the people were going to go into the promised land, but they were afraid of the people in the promised land too. They were large and very well trained warriors. So how are they going to do it? How are they, first of all, going to cross the Jordan River? Well, here's what God told them to do in Joshua 3. It tells this story where the river is at flood stage. Flood stage. And here's how they're going to get across. They're going to put their foot in the water. And when they put the foot in the water's going to part. The water's not going to part until they put their foot in the water. Okay? Now think about this if you're the first one. I'm the first guy. This looks bad. This river is going to take me way down there. Guy number one. And then guy number two is right behind him. The first group is carrying the Ark of the Covenant on their shoulders. So here they go. Ah! And then the water parts. And then he says to them, everywhere in this new land, everywhere where you put your foot, I'll give it to you. But first you got to put your foot. You got to do the deed. You got to trust the promise and then put one foot in front of the other. So I got a few things. I want you to think of your own, but a few things that I wrote down that for me, this is putting one foot in front of the other. This is me, Joshua 3. Get out of bed. Yeah, get out of bed. Number two, cook breakfast. Okay, number three, this is for the front row. Do your homework. Hey, man, do your homework. This is what God is saying. Put one foot in front of the other foot. Do your homework. Get out of bed. Say, I'm sorry. This is Bob putting one foot. He says, forgive others and ask for forgiveness. I need to do that. Here's another one. Live within my means. Over the course of my 64-year life, I've had a variety of means. I've had good days, I've had not so good days. Some days I drank Starbucks, some days Folgers. Yeah, some days I had steak. And I remember some really good days where Mama cooked Spam and beans. And I thought it was great. We'd cut Vienna sausage up, Sally, remember? We'd put it in the pork and beans, and that was dinner, baby. It was as good as it got. Live within your means. How many of you struggle with living within your means? Put one foot in front of the other. God says, let's go. Hey, respect the image of God in other people. Boy, we are living in a culture that is so disrespectful of other people. And when I come upon a person, I want to respect the image of God that's in that person. Again, this is one of the things Jeremy talked about a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about creation power. This all goes back to the creation story, the first chapter of Genesis, greater than the third chapter. The fact that we live in a culture that disrespects the image of God in each other doesn't mean that that's the way we should live. So that's going to change your thoughts. It's going to change your language. Respect the image of God in other people. And the last one I wrote down, these just random popping into my head. What does it mean to put one foot in front of the other? Don't gossip. Just stop it. Just stop it. I told you perhaps the story of my good friend who wanted to stop gossip. So I was in the midst of separating from my wife, and we're getting a divorce. And one of my friends who lives in Dallas was sitting at dinner with a friend of his who is a prospective client. And my friend's name is Stephen. And this other friend had been a student at ACU. Stephen had been a student at ACU. And the guy, not my friend, the guy who I probably knew, but he didn't tell me his name, he said this, "Hey, have you heard about Bob Strader?" You know, that's a signal right there. If someone says, "Hey, have you heard about Kevin Ball?" There's a signal right there. You know, you'd be alert for what's coming next. Now, he's in a car accident, that'd be one thing. But what this guy said next, he said, "I heard that," okay, watch out, it's coming. "I heard that he has gone off and left his wife and he's left with some young blonde-headed woman." And my friend Stephen, who has talked to me and knows kind of what's going on in my life, said, "Man, I haven't heard that. I'm going to call him right now." And he called me right then from the restaurant. Okay. And so he asked me, I didn't get it because went to voicemail. He said, "Hey, this is what someone just told me. Is that true?" Well, needless to say, things got real tense at the dinner table. Because what he had just done is called out someone for gossiping. Right? Don't gossip. Live within your means. Get up in the morning. Put one step in front of the other. God says, live this way. I'm bringing you out of slavery. And that just doesn't happen in a moment. It happens over a lifetime of walking in faith. And when God says, step your foot right there, step your foot right there. Step right into that. But I'm afraid. Step right into that. But it might be hard. Step right into that. Step into it. And finally, in the next chapter of Joshua, after they cross the river, teach your children and your grandchildren the rescue story. And what I want to say here is teach them your story. We all got a rescue story. And so really, and I've asked you this before, so next week, or when we're finished here today, I'm hoping for one or two volunteers who would be part of next week's presentation to tell your rescue story. I said, we don't want to hear your whole story. You know, my mom and dad met, and then they married, and then I was born, and then I went to kindergarten. Don't need all that, but just the moment where you knew that you needed the rescue and God showed up in some way or another. This could be before you became a Christian. It could be that story, or it could be a story since then, how God has showed up in your life and he's rescued you. We're going to share our rescue stories. In the last couple of weeks, I've been able to sit down with some people just one-on-one and hear their story. Isaac was one, and Deborah was one, and I hope you're sharing your stories with each other in small group times and in one-on-one times. You're just sharing your stories. I'm wanting to hear more of that. So if anybody wants to pay for dinner, no, excuse me, I'm available. Really, sometimes I buy. Sometimes we have a two-for-one, right? That's what I like. Tell your story. Tell your story of being rescued. And next week, we want to hear some stories. All of us hear some stories of rescue. I'll have some other things I'm going to say, too, next week. So, you know, you can't preach the whole 45-hour sermon. But next week, we're going to tell some stories. But one of the things you need to do when you realize you've been rescued, tell your kids. Tell your kids' kids. This is part of how you respond to rescue. Stick your foot in the water, tell the story. Let's stand and we're going to sing a song about salvation. Here we go.